For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Are you caring for an aging loved one? Are you a senior searching for answers? Welcome to Senior Care Live, a program dedicated to you, providing information, education, and resources for seniors and their caregivers. And now, America's Senior Care Consultant, Steve Kuecker.
Hello and welcome to Senior Care Live. I'm Steve Kuecker, your Senior Care Consultant, and I really appreciate you tuning in today. We have an awesome program on tap with you here today with my friend and special guest in studio, Mr. Bruce Glenn. He's the founder and president of Rally Wealth and Benefits. And Bruce, welcome back to Senior Care Live.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be here.
All right. And so I want to give some updated information for our listening audience in the Kansas City area. If you want to reach out to Bruce and his awesome team, maybe you have a question about what we're talking about today, or maybe on some of the past episodes, maybe you want to reach out for a free consultation, maybe get a second look at your portfolio. Here's the number in the Kansas City region, 913-308-0277. And then if you're outside of the KC area, Bruce serves clients all around the country. I'll give you a toll-free number, 888-241-2361. And you can always go online, an excellent brand new website, rallywb.com. And Bruce, I like your new website. That somebody did a good job on that.
Yeah, it's pretty strong. It's certainly an upgrade from what we've had in the past.
Yeah, it's just very, very nice. So, okay, so Bruce, today we're talking about estate planning.
Right, and estate planning is very timely right now because there are going to be some changes in 2025, 2026. I do have to say this, though. I am not a licensed attorney. However, I do have licensed estate planning attorneys on staff, and I've slept at the Holiday Inn Express and done events with them, and you know I'm fairly fluent, but this is not licensed advice. And I'm holding my hand. I know you can't see on the radio. Holding my hand up. Yeah. I'm saying I am not a licensed attorney, but we're going to talk about things you need to be aware of, though.
And so you have an estate planning specialist on your staff.
Yes.
Okay, all right, that's good. So why is, again, estate planning important for everyone to do, regardless of your income level?
Well, so it's really important. First of all, you want to make sure that your assets and your wishes are adhered to. So that's the main thing you want to have happen, what you want to have happen. But it goes a lot further than that. There's tax consequences depending on how you plan your estate, or if you don't plan your estate, and there's court costs that can come involved depending on what level of planning you do. Mm-hmm. There are some ways you can get around that if you have a proper trust in place and have done your due diligence. But if not, then you're going to have your family's going to have to deal with probate. So that's a big issue as well. And that's legal complications of all sorts. And then to me, one of the most important things is family disputes that arise. Mm. So if you don't do your planning correctly and you don't have somebody in charge as your executor of your estate or the trustee of your trust or successor trustee, things like this, people are going to make the decisions after you're gone. Or in some cases, estate planning needs to happen while you've got those documents, while you're still alive. You deal with that with Senior Care Live or Senior Care Consulting because if somebody has an issue and they don't have a power of attorney, a living will, health care directive, universal HIPAA, things like this, then your family that's going to take care of you may not have the authority to do it. And so that's pretty critical.
I've seen that come back to haunt a lot of people.
Oh, my God. And, it's one of the biggest mistakes in estate planning we see out there.
Yep.
People just don't do the, will and a trust is one thing, a poor will, but you better have a universal HIPAA, health care directives and power of attorneys in place for people. And then just having that peace of mind. But, things that I focus on, and I've done this with my own kids, and Christina, my oldest daughter, who's been on the radio many times too, she's a partner in my practice. And we've seen in our family, not my direct family, but my extended family, we've seen disputes come up that have, for the rest of their lives, separated families. Just there's nothing worse than having a family, and parents plan to take care of the kids, And then somebody gets mad at somebody else, and it just escalates. And then they don't even talk to each other the rest of their lives. And that happens all the time.
Yep.
And then the other things that are always concerning to me is that you've got kids, and you want to take care of your kids fair and equal, or whoever your beneficiaries are. But some of those folks aren't as able to handle the money the right way. In some cases, they may even be disabled, and you've got to have special protections for them.
Yep.
So that you don't blow up their benefits. But let's say you've got a family member that's a spendthrift, and they get all the kids get the same amount of money the same day. The spendthrift just blows through it.
Yep.
Right. In fact, I know I've spoken on this on the radio many different times, but on average, when in America, when people get a windfall of money, whether it be from a lottery winning or a big contract, maybe like a sports athlete's or a state plan or whatever the case is, on average, they will go through that money in 17 months.
Oh.
And they're even worse off. A lot of times it drives them to bankruptcy because now they've gone out and bought properties they can't afford the taxes on, big toys, so on and so forth. And
yep.
So you can build in some ways to handle the beneficiaries are receiving money in a spendthrift kind of protective mode. Personally, what I've done is kids will get a third when I pass, another third in 5 years, and another 5 years past that. Point being is they may blow through the first chunk. The second chunk, they may not blow through it quite as fast.
Yep,
the
yep.
third chunk, hopefully they wised up.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's hope.
And there's different ways to design that, right? Yeah, and again, yeah. I'm not an attorney. I'm just telling you some basic ideas there. But
but
that's really important. The other thing is creditor protection. Or what about that potential ex-spouse out there? You don't want them getting their claws on your inheritance. You want to follow your bloodline in most cases.
Yep.
Again, I'm just speaking generically. But
sure.
There's a lot of things that go into that. So I think it's one of the most critical things that we do in our lifetime for what happens after we pass on.
You know, and I how many times have I heard that, you know, there will be, you know, X dollar or some sort of an estate left to a family, and then maybe one of the children has gone through a divorce and they definitely don't want it going to that ex-spouse. So,
right.
You know, how do you protect that? Does that ex-spouse have rights? And then how do you deal with all of that? It's a huge, huge issue.
Yeah. And I know you're kind of making that more as a statement, but let's dive in on that just a little bit. So when you've got inherited money, you need to keep that segregated. Do not put it into the marital assets. Don't put your inherited money into the house with commingled marital asset. If you want to mm-hmm. buy the house, great. If you got enough money, buy it with your marital asset so it's 100% there. But when you start commingling this, then you're going to get into a situation of trying to source the funds and where it came from. And
the other spouse has rights at that point.
It could have.
Yeah.
It most likely will. But again, yep. it'd be up to a court and a whole bunch of pain and agony and trouble. So it's best to keep your inherited assets segregated and don't commingle, you know, non-inherited assets with the inherited assets.
And absolutely. And when you mentioned that, I see this a lot with senior care consulting, you know, to move into long-term care, say, for example, they require you to have a power of attorney for finances and power of attorney for health care. And that would also include your living will,
right,
with your statement of, you know, I want heroic measures taken. I do not want heroic measures taken. Do not resuscitate, you know, all of those sort of things.
Exactly.
All of those sort of things have to be planned out up front. And so you had mentioned earlier that if you don't take care of it, the state or some
default mechanism.
Yeah, some generic law or rule will take care of it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of anyone who would choose that.
Right. And, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is they may have made an estate plan in Louisiana, for example, and then they moved to Missouri. Well, Louisiana, I shouldn't even have said Louisiana because they're so different. They're most different state, politically speaking, parishes, not counties, and a lot of different things with Louisiana. It's unique. But anyway, the point is that state by state, a lot of these laws may not be the same.
Yep.
And they need to be reviewed. If you ever move from a different state, you should definitely have your plan reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say at least every 10 years, maybe even sooner, have your plan reviewed also.
Absolutely.
A lot of changes.
There, no doubt about it. What are the current limits on estate planning?
Right. So, you know, looking at 2324, your limits on estate tax exemption, it's a little bit under $13 million per person. So,
okay,
in a marriage situation, you've got roughly $26 million of exemptible estate tax out there.
All right. And then the gift tax exemption and annual exclusion.
Right. So annually, you could gift up to $17,000 per person. So you got five kids, you could do $70,000 for each one of them if you wanted to. And then you have a higher level of limits on the annual or the, your lifetime gift tax exemption. It kind of aligns along the way of the estate plan tax. It's in that range.
All right. If this sounds complicated, that's because it is. There is a lot to it. And having you know, an annual or every 5 year or some sort of a periodic review of your estate planning documents is super important. If you move to another state, the state regulations and rules, et cetera, may be different. That's another trigger for another review. If you have a question for Bruce, again, founder and president of Rally Wealth and Benefits, 913-308-0277 or toll free 888-241-2361 online at rallywb.com. And now the Senior Care Live question of the week. If you intend to give most of your wealth to charity, you may need extensive estate tax planning. Is that statement true or false? What do you think?
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, visit SeniorCareLive.com. We'll have more with Steve coming up next.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, go to SeniorCareLive.com. All right, back to the Senior Care Live question of the week. If you intend to give most of your wealth to charity, you may need extensive estate tax planning. Is that statement true or false? And the answer is... false. The answer is false. And Bruce... why is that statement false?
Well, in most cases, you can do what you want with your money. If you give it to a charity, there's not going to be a tax consequence, especially they're going to be like a 501c3 in most cases. So they can receive that money. They're not having the consequences of the tax situation. A couple of sidebars here. From a tax standpoint, so a lot of people are on our radio show are around RMD age where they're giving money to, not giving money, but forced to put money back in to pay the tax on pre-tax, IRA money, 401k money, pay that tax. And they're forcing it out. If you're charitably inclined and if you are forced to take some of the money out of your IRA anyway, if you send that money straight from your IRA and don't touch it, sent straight to your church or your charity of choice, and it's a qualified 501c3, you're not going to have to pay the tax on it because you didn't receive it. You've made the withdrawal that you were required to do.
Yep.
And then the church doesn't, or whoever, doesn't have to pay tax on it either. So just this little sidebar there. Same thing goes with estate planning. If you're gifting money to a charity, then that's pretty much a straight shot. And it's good for them, and it, you know, keeps your estate plan down. However, keep in mind that if you still have enough left over that you're giving the kids or whoever else you're giving to, you still do have those limits you want to bump up against and be careful about. And if that's the case, you do need to have some additional planning done.
All right. So if that is triggering questions for you like it is for me, again, reach out to Bruce Glenn. Check out their website at rallywb.com. All the phone numbers are there. You can contact them through this brand new website as well. And I think you'll really enjoy that. Bruce, I understand that 2025 has some significant changes coming. And can you share more with us about those changes?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're expecting that they're going to be decreasing some of the exemptions and the lifetime things that you can do from estate planning, making it a little bit more restrictive, a little less numbers that work for planning out. And one thing I want to mention about that is, and I don't like to speak directly to what may happen because I always say the government laws are written in pencil.
Yeah,
and they'll
right.
change them, and we've got an election coming up, so who knows
right.
if it's going to sunset or not sunset on the tax. But I think a lot of times people think, well, gee, that number is so high. Like it's roughly $13 million, and if you have a married couple, $26 million. And they'll think, gee, that's such a crazy number. And it is a big number. Don't get me wrong. But think about this. A family farm, it's not uncommon to have 2,000 acres in a family farm.
Yep.
And with, you know, post-COVID and even farmland was on the rise before COVID, some of this farmland out there is maybe $10,000 an acre.
Oh.
2,000 acres at $10,000 an acre. That's $20 million.
Yeah.
Well, if it's just – if mom passed away or dad passed away and it's just one of them, well, that's already hitting the limit.
Yep.
You know, and the, I know there's some different details. I don't want to get too deep into it. But the point is, it's not hard to get to that number. And, you know, farm situations are always tough because sometimes they want to sell the farm. Kids don't want the farm. And the parents are afraid to sell because they don't want all the taxes either. So there is a 1031 exchange. I know we talked about that on a previous show, but I thought I'd just throw it back out so people would understand. If you're in that situation, you've got rental property or whatever it is, and you want to maybe sell it, retire, but you don't want to get killed with taxes, we do have some strategies on how you can take that capital gain and move it into a qualified investment and avoid those long-term capital gains, or at least defer them down the road further.
And anytime you can pay less in taxes, that's a good day.
I like that.
Now, the government doesn't like that, but hey, there are rules that would allow you to pay less in taxes or at least defer the taxes. And there are rules that a lot of people don't know about. That's why this is all so, so very important. Bruce, are there strategies available to offset these changes?
Right. So, again, if you know that these changes are coming, or as soon as we do know, get with your estate planning attorney or your CPA or your financial advisor, or again, reach out to us. But if we know what the new rules are going to be, then we want to plan ahead of time for that. And maybe we want to gift some of that money out ahead of time. Because say, for example, you had a $15 million estate, current exemption, $10 million. And if that changes to $7 million and you didn't know that you could have gifted $3 million away before the law has changed and locked that in, now you've left that extra $3 million that used to be covered, that's not covered, you've left that exposed to high tax breaks. And in a lot of these cases, it may be as much as 40% taxes. So it can be, you know, pretty crazy. You don't want the government getting half your, or close to half your money.
And again, anytime you can pay less taxes, that's a good thing. So, all right. So for those who will be impacted by all of these upcoming changes, what can they do to prepare themselves?
Well, I'd say, first of all, don't wait to the last minute, because there is a finite number of estate planning attorneys, especially good qualified ones out there. And again, we're blessed to have a great estate planning attorney team in our group. But you want to plan ahead of time. Don't wait to the last minute. And these documents are kind of complicated. I mean, you don't walk in one day and get your estate plan done and walk out that same day with it, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that have to happen, and then you have to, you know, once you do the documents, you have to actually fund the trust, or you have to actually take, you know, steps to make sure that the titling and registration, all those type of things are done the way that they should be. But I would say, you know, get with your professional, your trusted professional, or reach out to us if you want a second opinion, anything else that we can do. Really important stuff. Get ahead of the game. Don't wait till the last second. Just be aware that there are some changes coming down the pipeline next year and some in 2026 as well.
All right. And then going back to something that you predicted earlier, maybe a month or two back, you felt pretty strongly that the Fed would be lowering rates coming up. And I'm hearing a lot of noise that, and it hasn't happened yet, and we won't know until it happens, but I'm hearing that they very well may lower the rates pretty much as you called it.
Right. So earlier in the year, and even last year, the stock market was predicting there might be as many as 6 rate reductions this year. And I was on record with your show last year saying I didn't see that happening. I thought it was way too aggressive. Rate hikes, the economy was too strong, unemployment was too low. I didn't see it happening at that number. But I thought maybe 1 to 2 rate hikes made sense, or reductions made sense. And earlier this summer, I came out and said that I felt pretty strongly that they wouldn't lower rates until we got into September, but I thought the September meeting would be the first rate cut that we'll see in the two-year period of time. And then the August meeting that just happened, that's pretty much how they've indicated that they're very likely to make a move. Whether it's going to be a quarter of a percent or a half percent, we don't know. And in financial terms, they call it 25 basis points or 50 basis points. But bottom line is a quarter of a percent or a half percent. So that's starting to get priced into the markets and the bond market. And I think we're seeing some reflection on that in some of the housing areas as well, and commercial lending.
And I always think it's very interesting, not that everything is political, but it happens right before an election. So
right.
I don't know, coincidence or not, I don't know. I'm call me a skeptic. So.
I would agree with you in most cases, but I think this one's been a little bit overdue. And and lowering the rates in September is really not going to make an impact on the economy in time for the election anyway. So I think this is kind of a little bit of an agnostic move.
Yeah.
And the Fed, they do try and run, neutral. They're not trying to sway the political fence, and so I don't think that Jerome Powell's got any political things in place. They just want to make sure the economy has a soft landing and get inflation under control and keep it there.
All right. Bruce Glenn, he's the founder and president of Rally Wealth and Benefits, 913-308-0277 or toll free 888-241-2361, online at rallywb.com. And Bruce, thanks so much for all the great information today. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, you too, Steve.
All right, we'll have more coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. Have a question? Visit SeniorCareLive.com. Stick around. We'll have more with Steve coming up next.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For podcasts of the program, go to SeniorCareLive.com or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, so I'm going to hammer on something here for a while. It's a hot button for me. I want to discuss memory care, the term memory care. I'll tell you, there's just so much confusion in the market over the very simple term memory care. And I have worked with so many of my clients, and they're just so confused by this. And these folks are highly intelligent, successful in their careers, very smart individuals. So this is not, you know, some lack of ability to understand the big term memory care. What it is I think the term has just been so misused out in the market, and it's used in different ways by different people, and it's just a gigantic mess, frankly. So I'm going to try to clear that up. Let me start off by defining what is memory care. And if you know me, I boil this down to the most simplistic of terms, super easy to understand. There are no ulterior motives to this. Super straightforward. This is the definition of memory care. I like to say memory care is a special type of care for someone with cognitive impairment. It is no more difficult than that. Memory care is a special type of care for someone with cognitive impairment. So I've spoken several times on the show in previous episodes about a memory care neighborhood or memory care unit within one of these senior care communities. So let's talk about that for a minute. So you move into a senior care community. They provide general care, and that's what I just call just general everyday care at their level of care. Okay, and you notice I didn't say memory care is a level of care. I'll get into that in just a second. Memory care is a special type of care for someone with cognitive impairment. So the top two reasons you would need, quote unquote, memory care in a senior care community, number one, by a long shot, is that you are, or your loved one, this individual is an elopement risk. Now, I know that's a weird term, but you could call a flight risk an escape risk. What, you know, I think a flight risk might be a little more of a generalized way to say that. The industry refers to that as an elopement risk. So you are at risk of leaving the building and putting yourself into harm's way. All right, there are two levels of elopement risk. I said I was going to break all this stuff down for you. That's what I'm doing. Number one, you could be a wanderer, wandering about. You're mobile. You're walking around. You're not trying to cause any problems. You look outside. You're like, huh, what's going on out there? I wonder what that... You just want to check it out. You're curious. So you walk outside to check it out. Remember, you have some form of dementia. You're not thinking clearly. You could walk outside and it's 0 degrees. It's 100 degrees. You could walk outside into traffic. And again, unintentionally put yourself in harm's way through just wandering about. So that makes you an elopement risk or a flight risk. The much higher level and more serious level of elopement risk is referred to as exit seeking. So exit seeking means, again, if you have dementia, you're not thinking quite clearly, you're confused, but you're looking around and you're like, you know what? This is a pretty nice place, but this isn't my house. This isn't where I live. I'm going home. You're out of there. You are trying to leave the building. You are trying to get out. You are blending in with the group to try to walk out the front door so that no one sees you because you are going home. This is not where you live. All right, so that's a much higher level of elopement risk, more of a serious issue. And so that would get you, either one of those levels would get you a quick ticket to memory care where it is a secured unit. It is a secured environment, meaning there are codes on the doors. And if you have dementia, you're probably not going to remember the 4-digit code that you have to hit on the keypad that unlocks the door that lets you out. All right, so you have coded doors to eliminate or at least manage that risk. The second reason that would get you, the second issue that would give you get you a quick ticket to memory care would be becoming overstimulated. So you're out in the other part of the building where they provide just general everyday care. I just call it general care. And you're around 80, 90, 100 other residents. There are too many people. Too much noise, there's just too much stuff going on. And it's very easy for someone at that right level of dementia to become overstimulated. And they just start to just wind up tight. You can just see it. And then pretty soon they're going to explode and maybe start yelling. They're belligerent, maybe aggressive, maybe even combative. Okay, because they're just being bombarded by too much stimulation. So overstimulation. And then having that reaction, that's, I think, the second most common reason that would get you, again, a quick ticket back to memory care. So in the memory care area or portion of the building, they have codes on the doors. Again, you can leave the area, but you just need to be accompanied for your own safety and your own well-being. It is a smaller space. Many times you'll see a memory care neighborhood or unit of, you know, maybe 10 or 12 or maybe 20 residents, not 60, 80, or 100 residents. So it's just, it's a smaller space with fewer residents. And again, all of this leads to less stimulation, fewer people, less stuff going on, less noise, all of the stimulation. Everything is just dialed down to keep you nice and calm and cool. The activity programming is very different. So you may not have a music activity for 60 minutes, but you might have one for 20 minutes because it's going to be hard to keep their attention for a long time frame, again, because of the dementia. So you're going to see a lot more activities, shorter time frames. You're going to see that. You will generally see more staff. A little more hands-on staff in the memory care neighborhood. And then these folks have had special training on how to approach someone with memory issues or cognitive issues. They're trained on something called redirection. So if someone is trying to beat down the door for the 15th time today because they're going home, they're trained on getting that person's mind off of wanting to exit the door and onto something else and redirect that person in a nice, safe, and secure manner and redirect their focus to something else. And then they also expect something called sundowning, typically associated with Alzheimer's disease. You could have this with any type of dementia, but typically you'll see that associated with Alzheimer's disease. And so the general idea with sundowning is later afternoon, maybe coinciding with the end of a work day, maybe early evening. I've heard of sundowning symptoms or issues happening at other times of the day, but that's kind of the most common one. So late afternoon, early evening, and someone just changes into a different person. And I had one person say, Steve, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's like someone flipped a switch and my mom is a different human being. And she's a little anxious. She's a little agitated and she's a little irritable, and you have to kind of work with her to kind of burn that off of her so that she can enjoy her dinner and then go on to do a couple of activities early evening and then go to bed, right? So that sundowning, these staff and the folks working, and God bless them and God love them, in these memory care units, they're trained to expect that. They're trained in some of the behaviors. And they're trained to expect all these things and successfully manage the plan of care for each and every resident. So again, defining memory care is a special type of care for someone with cognitive impairment. And coming up, I'm going to differentiate levels of care and types of care. This will all make sense coming right up.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. To contact Steve or a guest on his show, visit SeniorCareLive.com. We'll have more coming up.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. Have a question? Visit SeniorCareLive.com. All right, back to that term, memory care. I'm going to pound this thing home all day long here. Memory care is a special type of care for someone with cognitive impairment. It's that simple. So memory care is not a level of care. It is a type of care that can be delivered at different levels of care. Now, again, I have worked with highly, highly intelligent people at some of my clients. And they're just completely confused by this because they've received all this, you know, lack of information. Frankly, it's misinformation, misused term. And they're just completely confused by this. So that's why I wanted to spend a little bit of time on this today. So I'm just going to, there are four or five different levels of care that you could receive memory care at. I'm just going to focus on the big two, assisted living and long-term care. So assisted living is a level of care. And guess what? There is a licensure attached to that level of care that says you have to do this, you have to do that. It says exactly what you can and cannot do. Long-term care, also known by still a ton of people, they still call it a nursing home. Okay, that's I generally refer to that as long-term care. That is governed by a licensure. A great big fat book. Hundreds of pages saying what you can, what you must provide, what you can't do, and it has all these rules and regulations. So in my book, the level of care is how you're licensed. It's what licensure are you? And if you understand, there is no licensure for memory care. Hear that really, really loudly and clearly. There is no licensure for memory care. It does not exist. Can I be more clear than that? So the assisted living level of care is for, it's more of a social model, and it's for someone who needs help with their activities of daily living. So you may need minimal or full assistance with your bathing, dressing, grooming, using the toilet. You may have some incontinence needs where you may need a little bit of support there. They manage and order and distribute all of your medications. There's a full slate of activities for meaningful social engagement. They prepare and provide all meals, snacks, and hydration at this level of care. Okay, you notice I'm not getting into any medical stuff. Okay, it's a tremendous amount of support. It's just not medical in nature. All right, there are doctors that will come in to see you, essentially making a house call. There's transportation to take you out to see your doctor or a specialist. That is the assisted living level of care. Within the assisted living level of care, you could have, say, 3/4 of the building that provides general care for those 30 or 40 or 60 residents living there, just receiving that general care, bathing, dressing, grooming, toileting, incontinence support, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then, if that assisted living community and that assisted living level of care has a memory care neighborhood or memory care part of the building designated specifically to provide care, that special type of care for someone with cognitive impairment, it's going to be, again, that smaller space, fewer residents, coated doors, less stimulation, more activities, shorter period of time, more staff trained in redirection and sundowning. So if someone needs help, again, with those activities of daily living at that assisted living level and they have cognitive impairment, that's your fit. Now, you can also have the long-term care level of care, which does, they provide everything that the assisted living level does, plus a lot more staffing and medical support. They can manage diabetic management with insulin injection and pain management. They can provide wound care. They can care for someone with a urinary catheter. They can care for someone who needs tube feeding. It goes on and on and on and on. You have a lot more RNs and LPNs at that point. You have a lot more staff at that point. They can provide heavy, heavy physical care where it takes two staff or maybe even a mechanical lift to help an individual from point A to point B. A lot heavier care and more medical in nature. You could have someone with that level of care, that need that matches that level of care, and also have cognitive impairment and need memory care, that special type of care for an individual with cognitive impairment at the long-term care level of care. So if you're at that lower level, you need help with those activities of daily living, and you need memory care, you're looking for an assisted living licensed, an assisted living level of care that offers memory care. If you have needs higher than that, that move over, extend over into that long-term care level, then you're going to need to find a long-term care community that also offers memory care. And I would say there are so many people in the market that misuse that term memory care. And frankly, I think some of them misuse it on purpose. Dare I say that? Well, yeah, I did. I just said it. Right. And some, and I don't think most people are doing that, but I know some of them are doing it. They imply that memory care, they're implying memory care is a higher level of care. It's just not the truth. It's not accurate at all. The reason I know that is because I've had all kinds of clients, again, highly intelligent people, completely confused. But Steve, I mean, they're an assisted living community, but they also have that higher level of memory care, right? So that's kind of like the nursing home level, right? So what they do, they're implying that memory care is a higher level of care. No, it is not. They're still licensed as an assisted living level of care. They just offer two types of care, general care, memory care. So if that's confusing, I hope that I kind of cleared that up a little bit. You have levels of care, you have types of care. Memory care is a type of care that could be found at the two primary levels of care, assisted living, long-term care. It can also be found at three other levels of care. How about that for confusing it all? If you have questions about all of this, I know it can be terribly confusing. Call me at Senior Care Consulting, 913-945-2800. I'd be happy to work with you, answer your questions. If you're needing to find a place that offers memory care, we can help walk alongside you and help you make one of the most important decisions of your life. We'll help you get it right and get it right the first time. SeniorCareConsulting.com for more information. All right, I'm Steve Kuecker, and I wish you grace and peace. May God bless you and your family on this day and always. Join me next week right here on Senior Care Live.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.